This is the Eurosnob Podcast. What's up, guys? Just wanted to give you a quick breakdown of how this episode is set up. This part of the episode is mainly Arsenal's recent form and transfer rumors. The U.S. soccer part is being released as its own episode, as that conversation went on quite a bit longer than we expected it to. So if you're on this episode, listening to this right now, this is going to be the Arsenal content. If you're looking for the U.S. soccer content, check out the episode that's going to be released in iTunes shortly after you see this one hit. So, enjoy. So we'd like to welcome everybody into another episode of the Eurosnob Podcast. I'm Ian, and joined tonight by Alex. How you doing?
Not too bad, buddy. How about yourself?
Hey, Ian, I can't complain. Keeping busy with a new job, finishing up the kitchen. So,
all adult stuff, right?
it's all adult stuff, and it's just a matter, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, like, why the hell does anybody ever want to be an adult? Like, when we're 16, 17, you say, man, I just can't wait until I'm 21, 22, and I can be an adult.
Yeah, if you could go back in time and tell younger you, like, slow your roll, you know?
Yeah, hey, but it's all good, man. There's some real exciting times going, so I'm sure there'll be more to come out about that in the very near future. But on to subjects that are going to, you know, interest everybody else here, not just us. Arsenal in the U.S., that's what we got going for you guys tonight. We're going to hit a little bit of Arsenal stuff for the first two-thirds of it, and we're going to come strong on a little bit of U.S. soccer at the end. So if you're a U.S. soccer person tuning in for this, stick around. I promise you won't be too bored by the Arsenal stuff, but we will get to some U.S. stuff for you. Hopefully you won't be too bored. So, I mean, who can ever be bored with Arsenal, though? I mean, they're always up to something, making it interesting, right?
Well, no, bored is never a word I could use. I could use exasperated, frustrated, angry, disappointed, perturbed, and I swear I'm not looking at thesaurus.com and just typing in stuff.
You took AP English.
I got a 3 on that test out of 5, so obviously I didn't take it too well. But yeah, it's been a tough time to be an Arsenal fan past few years. past few years, and kind of summing up the recent problems with Arsenal on the pitch, and certainly going to get into the transfer stuff as well, but on the pitch, knocked out of the FA Cup by Nottingham Forest, a loss in the Premier League to Bournemouth. I don't know where to start, honestly. I really don't. And I know you and I were kind of talking off camera about how these losses affect us, or if they affect us anymore, but just kind of starting with the FA Cup result, just because we are the holders of that trophy. We obviously won't be retaining it. We managed to make Eric Lehigh, who wasn't good enough for the U.S. under Jurgen Klinsmann or Bruce Arena, we managed to make him look like Danny Alves in his prime. So that took some skill. So big props to the Arsenal squad for making that happen. What is your feeling just about getting knocked out of the cup? You know, were you surprised? I mean, nothing with this club should surprise you, though.
No, I mean, I'm certainly not surprised. They've kind of we've shown that fragility for years, especially when we come up against clubs that we really should beat. After seeing the lineup going into the game, if I remember the lineup correctly, I don't think it instilled a whole lot of confidence going into it. But hey, I mean, at least we can focus on winning the title, right? We saw.
That
should put all our attention into that and don't have to worry about midweek games or the FA Cup games. Yeah, no. That ship sailed a long time ago.
Yeah, that ship was like the Titanic. It never had a chance.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. Did I see that game? No, I did not. Am I glad that I didn't see the game? Very, very glad. I can't explain how glad I am that I didn't have to see that game. But yeah, I mean, you kind of said it right there. We made Eric Lehigh look like a superstar and let him score a worldie. And what more do you need to say about that game?
Yeah, it's interesting. You brought up the lineup. When it came out, I wasn't surprised with the lineup. I was surprised we didn't have a single option on the bench to kind of change the game, though. Because I do feel like, yeah, it's good to have youth players on the bench, you know, in case you come out, get out to a big lead, you know, you can sub off some of the more established guys, get some of the youth players the experience. But I feel like you still sort of had one rescue option on the bench, you know, whether it was an Ozil or Alexis or Lacazette, just someone where if you were down late, you bring them on, as opposed to having to rely on Nketiah and I don't even know who we brought on in that game, but I mean, it was a mess, and it felt weird from the first whistle. You know, we couldn't string passes together. I think Welbeck and Iwobi. The less I say, the better.
You say it's just funny. You said that we couldn't string passes together, and then you mentioned Welbeck and Iwobi right after that. And
it's almost like there's a correlation there.
Right. I don't think that needs any further explanation. I think it says it all right there. You look at those two alone, man. It's
funny because, I mean, Welbeck has never been a good technical player, but he was always at least able to provide something in the way of like his athleticism and his work rate and his pace. But I don't think he has that anymore. Just with all the injuries he suffered recently, the knee injury, of course, that kind of limits your explosiveness. And Iwobi, I'm honestly not sure what has happened to that guy. You know, I know our buddy Bill is not a huge Iwobi fan, and he's quite vocal about that on Twitter. But I always try to stick up for Iwobi because I like to stick up for young players. And I do, you know, I always think that there's ways to keep them going even during these more difficult times. And to his credit, you know, he's shown that ability to make those killer passes, but my God, he was poor in that game. And even in the Bournemouth game, you know, yes, he did set up Bellerin with that great chance to equalize. And then of course, it all went to shit after that anyway. So, or not to equalize, sorry, we took the lead off of the Bellerin goal, but switching games here. But just with the Nottingham Forest game, it was just one of those things where if this is one of our better chances at a trophy, why did we look so flat? You know, I know the personnel didn't help. I know we played a few young guys out of position, but I struggle to understand the mentality of the manager on that one, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really know the reasoning why. I mean, why he went with the lineup he did. I know we had a couple guys that are hurt, which is a big deal. I mean, I believe we were without Koscielny. I believe Ozil still was hurt. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of these. It was Koscielny, Ramsey, Ozil. I mean, when you have a squad that really isn't very deep to begin with and you're missing that quality, I mean, it's tough to replace them when you don't have the options to begin with. I mean, even with a completely healthy squad, like, who's behind them? Wilshire, Maitland-Niles. I mean, when you're that quickly to that level of player, I mean, Alex Iwobi into the lineup playing, I don't know what position. I don't think he had a position. And not necessarily, I mean, from the little bits that I did see about the game, I kind of watched a little bit, but not actually when it happened. But I mean, it's just looking at the personnel that he has at his disposal, the manager, I mean, I don't really know where else he goes with it. If he's going to try and rotate a little bit, and even if he wasn't, because I don't know that he necessarily, I don't know. It's just selection issue. It's a squad depth issue for me more so than anything else.
Yeah, but I mean, I still, like I said, I still think you need one rescue option on the bench. I mean, I don't think you go into a game like that just assuming that you're going to jump out to a lead. So we, you know, the only people we need on the bench are youth players. Now, granted, you know, like you said, I'm going to correct myself from earlier. I think Ozil was injured, but I think Alexis and Lacazette were both healthy. I know Giroud was out and that kind of changes things. So maybe you don't want to risk Lacazette. I really don't understand the thinking, but even so, the 11 on the field should have been able to put together a better performance than that. I mean, that's just part of the issue there, to be quite honest. You know, the defense looked fragile. Ospina is a walking disaster in goal. You know, just nothing about that team radiated confidence to me, except for Maitland-Niles, honestly. You know, he's kind of the one that does inspire some confidence in me, at least, and feeling like he's someone who can make things happen. But, you know, it was frustrating to see, just because, like you said, I mean, the title's gone, the Premier League title's gone. So you do kind of want to put your eggs in these other baskets, honestly, because, I mean, top four is becoming a little bit of a stretch right now. And, you know, I know we're going to get into the Bournemouth game briefly, but it was just a frustrating game to watch. And you kind of felt it coming the whole game. You know, we seem to struggle in those situations with these lower league teams, especially when we go away, at least, you know, that they, you know, if we jump out to an early lead, we seem to do well. But if that game is close for a while, we tend to tighten up. And I don't, you know, again, we can get into mentality and all that sort of stuff. Well, but
I think what you said right there, I think you're kind of on your way to the Bournemouth game anyways. But the thing you said there about when the game is close, we kind of tighten up. I think that's really a good description of what happened to that Bournemouth game. I mean, that first half, we pretty much had our way with whatever we wanted to do. I don't remember if we got our goal in the first half or if it was in the second half. I'm sorry, let me check one second. It's early in the second. We got our goal. So we went through the first half of that game and really we were on top. We were dictating the play for the most part. We were creating chances. We looked good. But again, it goes back to just a typical Arsenal performance. And we get that feeling. I know I did sitting there. I'm pretty sure the commentators mentioned it at some point in time. You know, we needed to capitalize eventually on one of those chances or it was going to come back to bite us in the ass. Yeah, we capitalized on one of the chances in the second half, but then, you know, Bournemouth started to put some pressure on and we just absolutely collapsed. It was a story of two halves, two completely different teams out there.
It really was. You know, when we got that, the opening goal, I believe it was Bellerin. You know, when Iwobi put him in with almost a perfect pass beautiful pass. I mean, that was a pass that Ozil would be proud of. And, you know, we went up and you're thinking, all right, you know, now we push on and we kind of, you know, we'll get that second goal. And then once Bournemouth got that equalizer, you just had this gnawing feeling in your stomach. You're like, oh boy, here it comes. You know, and we struggled at away to Bournemouth last season too, but this is a worse Bournemouth team. I think at the time we played them, they were 19th in the league, something like that. You know, they've won like two games in the past few months or something. You know, I could be making that statistic up, honestly, but you know, just don't check me on it. But basically,
don't check any of our statistics ever.
Yeah, no, I mean, most of what I say is made up anyways, but I mean, the long and short of it is Bournemouth's not a good team. So there's no, I mean, yes, it's an away game. Tough shit. Like, honestly, you figure out a way to win that game or at the very least get a point, but not collapse at the end, give up a late goal. It kind of reminded me of the Watford game earlier this season. If you remember that one where we went up 1-0, Watford equalized, and yet, you know, they got a dodgy penalty at the end, but basically like Watford kind of piled on the pressure and we collapsed, you know? And it's frustrating when you're in a top four race and all the teams around you are picking up points and you're dropping points because that gap is just building and building and building. And, you know, the atmosphere around the club is just a disaster right now. And, you know, obviously we're going to tie that to some of the off the field stuff, you know, with Alexis Sanchez. I know you kind of wanted to get into that and your thoughts on how all of that is unfolded, you know, just kind of recapping for people who don't have the spare time to check Twitter every 20 seconds like us. Seems like Alexis Sanchez is on his way to Manchester United in what is basically going to be a swap deal for Henrik Mkhitaryan. We don't know if any cash is coming Arsenal's way as well. You know, details are still being finalized, but Wenger commented on it today, and today being Thursday, that it seemed like it was likely to happen. So I'm just curious to get your thoughts on kind of the premise of the swap deal, but just like how the Alexis situation's unfolded before we get into kind of the incoming transfers.
Well, the Alexis thing is, it's interesting. I think the more and more comes out about really what his wage demands are, it kind of makes me wonder. I mean, how much Arsenal really is at fault for this. Now, I know that could be an inflammatory statement. I mean, I'm going to throw it out there. Is Arsenal not really as much to blame as we're all kind of thinking? I mean, in all reality, yeah, they probably are, you know, as much fault as we've been saying they are. But when you've got a player that's coming out with the wage demands that Alexis is, I mean, even if we had accepted City's bid in the summer, I mean, yeah, you know, and sure, maybe he's ramping up his wage demands as he has a little bit more leverage as he gets closer to being a free agent and all that. I understand how that could kind of happen. But he's not going from 350K a week to 500K a week in just a couple of months. I mean, his wage demands in that summer, I mean, even if we did accept City's bid, which I believe was probably right around 60 million, if we did accept that bid, would they have even agreed on terms? I mean, the reports were that we were coming to an agreement as far as terms with City, and then City said, not a chance to Alexis's wage demands. So, you know, and if I remember correctly, too, it was kind of PSG and City in the summer. United really wasn't overly involved in the mix. There were some kind of backdoor rumors that maybe he was going there, but I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it. I don't really know that it really means anything. It was just kind of an interesting thought that, you know, maybe, I mean, Alexis has clearly held us hostage. You know, what more could we have really done about it though?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, I suppose it's easy to say in hindsight that you should have sold him over the summer, but I think the club has kind of put itself in a really terrible position. Either, and I think a lot of people said this at the time, to be fair, either you sell him last summer or you hold on to him till the contract ends. You don't do this half and half deal where the valuation you're getting for him is next to nothing. Now going back to the summer, you know, there was definitely flirtation between City and Alexis all summer. That shouldn't have come as a shock to us, like that it came, and then it came down to like deadline day, and we said, oh, we don't have enough time to find a replacement. And then we went to Monaco with the last minute bid for Lamar, having chased him all summer. We went to Monaco for a bid for Lamar. And then they said, you know, no, it's too late. Like, you've come to us with 2 hours left in the deadline. We're not going to close a deal, sending a player from one league to another. It's not even like another team in your same league. I tend to think in terms of his wages, and obviously we're not privy to the talks that were had, but a team doesn't bid on a player unless they're 99% certain they're going to agree on terms. So I tend to think that there were intermediaries that agents at play there, where they basically agreed, assuming Arsenal accepts his bid from City, we'll take this salary. So I think that concern is a little bit, you know, a little bit of a cop-out for Arsenal, to be honest. So I think you needed to sell him in the summer, but you needed to do it early enough where you could have put in a real bid for Lamar or some other replacement. But we didn't. Maybe we thought, hey, if we hold on to him, we can still make a run at the title because we've added Lacazette. You know, maybe the squad's good enough. And that quickly kind of went to shit, to be quite honest. So I don't know like how much we could have anticipated that. I mean, the cynics will say, well, with Wenger in charge, we should have anticipated. I'm not going to get into that, but we're in the position we're in. Like we have to look at things as they are now. So, you know, I guess the thinking at Arsenal now is, hey, is 6 months of Alexis better than, you know, 3.5 years of a fairly good player in Henrik Mkhitaryan? I guess their thinking at this point is yes. And, you know, me personally, I'd almost rather hold on to Alexis and see if you can get top four and then, you know, the money you get for Champions League could be reinvested, but I also understand the club trying to get something for him.
It's one of these things, right? You know, and I agree with you that, you know, holding on, the reason that, if, you know, generally speaking, if you think you're going to, if you're not going to sell Alexis in the summer, you hold on to him and let him leave at the end of his contract. But you only do that if you really have a legitimate chance of winning anything. I mean, it's like any other major sport out there. Hockey, baseball are huge for this. When it comes down to their trade deadlines, all the teams that are not going to win anything, that are not going to make the playoffs, what do? They sell off all their players that are going to go to free agency, so they get something for them. You know, that's what the trade deadline is in those other American sports. So for me, it kind of works. You know, we get to a point right now, if you look at the table, I mean, we're 8 points behind Chelsea for fourth place. Eight. You know, Chelsea and Liverpool are on 47. We're on 39. Even with Alexis, do we really think we're closing an 8-point gap? I mean, we're over halfway through this season. 8 points is a lot of ground to make up.
And to your point, just about the gap, we've already played our two games against Liverpool and Chelsea in the league too. So it's not like we can make up those points directly, to kind of support what you were saying there.
Right. Exactly. So at this point in time, you know, we can kind of go back and get after Arsene and Arsenal for holding on to Alexis through the summer. You know, you can make the argument as you will. I tend to think that it's not as egregious as most people think it is, but I tend to be a little bit more not supportive, but I tend to give the club a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt. I mean, sure, it's becoming much more difficult to do that in recent years. There's no doubt about it, but I'm not necessarily going to jump all over the club, you know, for the way that they've handled the Alexis situation at this point in time, because we really don't know all the ins and outs. I mean, maybe Alexis's side were telling Arsenal, hey, look, you know, if we make Champions League, yeah, maybe I'll stay. Or, you know, we have no idea what was actually said in those negotiations. So it's kind of hard to make that ultimate judgment. But there comes a point in time where, as a club, you need to make a decision. Like you said, in the summer, what is going to happen with him, and you need to stick to it. And I think that's where Arsenal can get a lot of blame for this, is they didn't do that. You know, they didn't come to that conclusion confidently earlier enough. And that's something that we've seen on and on with this club. Really, just look at Arsene Wenger and all the controversy, and is he going to stay? Is he going to retire? All of that stuff. The club has shown they can't stick to a decision.
Dad, the word you use is confidently, and I think that was a great word that you use. The club didn't make a decision. The club pushed off a decision. That's what they did. The club said, hey, we don't want to deal with this right now, and we, you know, our plan B isn't really coming through, so we're just going to kind of push along and see what happens and hope it works out. And you brought up Wenger's contract situation. It's the same thing. Like, the club has shown a pattern of letting these contracts either run down or letting contract negotiations become such a point of contention. You know, you can stretch back to the Cesc Fabregas situation. You can stretch back to the Samir Nasri situation, where you let it get down to a year left in their contract. Same with Van Persie, you know, with other players too. So this isn't like necessarily a new pattern for Arsenal, and that's kind of the frustrating thing. Like, everyone knew that the 1 year issue was coming up with Alexis and with Ozil. You've got a bunch of guys on this team who are coming up on contract issues. You know, Ramsey in the summer will be 1 year away from his. You've got Jack with his current contract situation. Now, that one looks more likely to get renewed, which would be great. We can get into that. I kind of want to throw something at you, though, about public relations, because you're talking about Alexis's people and the discussions they've been having. Is it interest? And I think Yankee Gunner on Twitter posed this question. How come Ozil isn't getting half the flack that Alexis has been getting for the contract limbo? Like, Ozil's contract is at the same point that Alexis is. Why is he not getting a lot of the, not criticism, but everyone just seems to be giving him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt in terms of like not renewing his contract and not being more committal?
I think it has a lot to do with how those players are normally treated in the media. Alexis is seen as this player that will do whatever it takes to win, is going to work. He's going to put it. It's here comes our buzzwords again, passion. You know, he's going to show that passion. He's going to show, if you watch him on the field, you know, when he throws his little tantrums, what do commentators say? Oh, he just wants to win so badly. But if Mesut Ozil is on the pitch and he looks mad, they say, oh, he just doesn't care enough. He's just mad that his teammates, he's just blaming his teammates. So you have a such a dichotomy in how those two players are portrayed in the media to begin with. So, and I think, you know, like I said, Alexis gets a lot more credit for wanting it more. Again, another buzzword. So that being said, you know, I think that kind of causes people to, he gets talked about more in that way. They say, okay, well, he's going to leave Arsenal because he wants to win and he's not going to win at Arsenal. So I think it kind of, I don't really know how else to explain it, but there's definitely something there with how those players are, like I said, how they're normally portrayed, how they're, you know, like I said, Alexis is seen as somebody who'll do whatever it takes to win. You know, one of those things is to leave Arsenal. Mesut Ozil, he's laid back. He's just kind of out there, doesn't really care all that much. So he kind of, I get the impression that even when he does get talked about, people say he's content to stay at Arsenal.
Yeah, you know? I think there's been, yeah, you know, Ozil doesn't have the demonstrative body language that Alexis has. And, you know, Alexis being a goal scoring winger, the stats kind of jump off the page more with him. So more people like, oh my God, Alexis's contributions to Arsenal are so much greater than Ozil. Well, if you've been watching Arsenal for the past 2 months, only one player has been shining, and it wasn't Alexis. It's been Mesut Ozil in the big games, really coming to play and stamping his authority, to use a cliche pundit
putting
phrase.
His mark on the game.
Yeah, you know, showing a bit of ball, you know.
Well, I thought no. We went over this. No more.
Yeah, actually, accents. Yeah, no more accents.
I'm because sorry. what it sounded like you said, I'm not gonna say live.
Yeah, no, that was nothing. None of that was anything.
What it sounded like, it's not at all what you were trying to say, and it's kind of funny.
Yeah, no, that was 20 seconds of nothing, honestly. but basically, I think what you brought up is a good point about like the narrative around the two players is dictating the conversation. You know, people are like, oh, well, Ozil, you know, like you said, Ozil's just content to stay in London, or, oh, well, no other club really wants Ozil, really? I could think of dozens of clubs. sorry. We had a little podcast blooper there. So
that's what it sounded like.
But the narrative.
I just derailed the podcast. Sorry about that.
It's ruined. We're done. No, but people like, oh, you know, Ozil's getting married. You know, he's going to stay in London. You know, he's already bought a house, this and that. Like, there's all these like ready-made kind of, not excuses, but just like factors why people just assume that Ozil's going to stay. And he might, you know, and I think that there's probably a better 50% chance that he will. I know that The Sun, as shitty a newspaper as it is, you know, mentioned that Ozil and Wilshire are likely to renew. But it's just been like a foregone conclusion for so long that Alexis is never going to renew. And maybe that's kind of what plays into it. I do think that the Ozil renewal is not a done deal, and it kind of ties into the other transfer rumors that are kind of floating around right now, and I'm curious to get your thought on this. So the rumors that have been doing the rounds lately are that Arsenal will swap Alexis for Mkhitaryan, Henrik Mkhitaryan, attacking midfielder for Manchester United. And apparently Arsenal are also in for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang from Borussia Dortmund. And another rumor that's been going around is Arsenal in for the winger from Bordeaux, Malcolm, the Brazilian player. That one seems to have flared up for a little bit, but seems to be dying down. Maybe it's not something that'll happen this January, but something to look for in the summer. With the head scout Sven Mislintat in charge now, you know, seems to be kind of wielding some influence there. Let's talk about the Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang. Like, you're hearing that. What's your thought process? What are you thinking? Are you thinking it's likely? The Mkhitaryan one seems pretty close to done. And the Aubameyang, from what we've read and seen today, he's not traveling with Dortmund on their trip to Hertha Berlin. The management there was kind of upset with Arsene Wenger for even bringing him up in his press conference, even though it was just because he was asked about it. But you know how things get lost in translation. They both seem fairly far along. Are you still a little skeptical, or are you kind of buying this?
Well, of course I'm skeptical. It's Arsenal and it's transfers. I mean, you know, what do we always say? Unless it's tweeted by Ornstein or you see the player in an Arsenal shirt, it's not done. It's kind of an interesting dynamic with Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, because we already have a squad that's probably a little bit old for the way the game is today. We're definitely one of the older sides in the Premier League, at least in the clubs that really matter. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, looking at bringing in two players that I believe are both 28 years old. You're on mute. 28, 29, something in that range.
Sorry, I was doing some frantic typing, and then I realized that it wouldn't help if my...
That's all right.
Mkhitaryan's 28, so you're right 28. On that one.
I think Aubameyang is... 28. Similar, 28, soon to be 29. So it's kind of an interesting thing that we're looking at these players that are older. And I'll be honest with you, one of the things that I cannot understand is how these are being criticized. All the time, all summer long, all season long, crying out for Arsenal to go and to do something, buy a player of some sort of substance. You know, and we made, you know, we already signed the, I'm not going to try and say his name, but the Greek kid, the center back.
Mavropanos.
There you go. He, that signing got criticized. And I'm like, we cry out for, you know, we signed him and what do we say? Oh, we don't sign, you know, why aren't we signing ready-made players? Okay, fine. So now we have Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang linked. Oh, why are we signing players who are 28 years old? Like, look, you go to my friends just a little bit up north, give your head a shake. What the hell is the matter with you people?
Yeah, it's I'm kind of in two minds when it comes to all, because you're looking at it from an Arsene Wenger perspective, assuming... And my assumption is that he's gone in the summer. That's just my own feeling. You know, you're buying players who are 28, probably have 2-3 more years at their peak. So maybe the thinking is, if he's not going in the summer, maybe he wants one last go around with these older players, and you know, also to entice Mesut Ozil to stay. And maybe that's the thought process now. Kind of connected to that is maybe my thinking that Sven Mislintat is starting to kind of take more of the reins with transfers. So maybe he's thinking, you know, let's get some ready-made players for the next half season, you know, the next year or two, while I implement my scouting network, start to bring in young players, but not bring in young players to a position where they have to star, where maybe you can bring them in and kind of groom them and kind of bring them along slowly where they're not going to carry the load, which is where the Malcolm signing in the summer or signing him for the summer would actually make some sense, you know, where now you have other players like Ozil, Mkhitaryan, Lacazette, you know, you have attacking players where Malcolm isn't coming in if he were to come in or if someone of his stature, and he's not forced to carry the load. Maybe that's the thinking. You know, what I would say is it's the thinking with Meslintop for a lot of people is like, well, he's going to sign a bunch of young players and Arsenal is kind of going to follow the Borussia Dortmund model. Maybe that's not the thinking. Maybe it's just players that Meslintop is comfortable with and he knows what Aubameyang can do. He knows what Mkhitaryan can do. And he's just like, you know what? In our setup, these guys can thrive. So the Aubameyang link was more surprising to me because you just made your record signing in the summer a striker in Alexander Lacazette. So is this because you want to be able to rotate? I mean, that's expensive rotation if that's the case. Is it because you want to use one in the league, one in Europa and cup games? Or are you going to play two up front? Or maybe, and this is something kind of mentioned on Twitter, which I at least gave it some thought. Maybe Wenger's not thrilled with Lacazette because it took him three seasons to finally buy the guy. Maybe he's just not sold. And, you know, that could just be, you know, kind of conspiracy theory talk. I mean, who knows, honestly. But if you get a player like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's been one of the top five strikers in Europe for the past 3 to 4 seasons, and he wants to come to your club and you can afford it and your fan base needs a jolt of enthusiasm, I'm not sure how you turn that down. Now, with Mkhitaryan, obviously, if we could have gotten Martial from United, that'd have been great. But Mkhitaryan, at his best, is one of the best playmakers in the game from the wide position or as a number 10. He can score goals, he can assist, he can create chances. If you can get the Mkhitaryan from Dortmund, not the Mkhitaryan that's been at United, then you've got a real player on your hands. And it takes a lot of the creative load off of Ozil. So I get the thinking. You know, it surprises me because I thought we would go a little younger, but the more I think about it, the more I like it, as long as we're not also neglecting players for the future, which is why I think the Mavropanos signing was actually very encouraging, you know, that we're already implementing that young scouting network and bringing in these players and kind of balancing that with ready-made players.
Right. It's definitely kind of an interesting to look at, and I think one of the things that Dortmund does well is Dortmund doesn't force their young players into the lineup until they're ready. They have enough senior players of, you know, mid to late 20s that, you know, if a player like Pulisic, for example, isn't ready to break into the team, he just doesn't. They don't force those players in. They give them the opportunities. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, I think is kind of a misconception in a lot of ways about the way Dortmund is run. Is people think Dortmund just throw young kids out there all the time. It's not really true. They have a system where they have a lot of good senior players and they work their young players into the side, and they have a lot of really good ones that earn their stake in the first team. In order to have that type of a setup, you have to have those quality first team players ahead of them. When you're looking at Arsenal right now, and we've already talked about it, we talked about our squad depth. We've talked about our squad depth for years now. Lacazette, right now you have Alexis for probably not any longer.
Probably for another day.
Yeah, if that. Yeah. You've got Ozil, you've got Ramsey, you've got Wilshere, you've got Xhaka. It's your senior depth as far as midfielders and forward. Oh, Giroud. Unless he goes for an Aubameyang deal. But looking at that, that's your depth going forward. Now, there's really not a lot of depth. So the next step is, okay, who are the young players that are filling in? Well, Alex Iwobi really hasn't taken the chances that he's been given. Danny Welbeck, not a young player anymore, supposed to be that some of that squad depth going forward. Not Arsenal quality. I think we can all agree on that. Seems like a great guy, you know, say what you want about the injuries and what they contribute to whether or not he is the quality player that we need. You know, and but either way, he's not good enough. So what are we doing? I mean, we're looking to bring in Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan. Yeah, we're losing Alexis. That's a big loss. But we're certainly improving overall. So that's the way I look at it. The more good players, and I know we kind of had a little bit of a discussion, kind of a little bit back and forth about it the other day on Twitter. I'm all for get as many good players in as possible, and a good manager is going to sort it out. Now, Arsene Wenger is our manager. In past years, I would have had full faith that he could have sorted it out. Right now, I'm not so sure. But the thing being said about that is how long is he really going to be here? It's an interesting discussion. I was, if you asked me a couple weeks ago to a month ago, I would have said that he was going to be gone at the end of the year. Now I'm back into, you know, I'm not really sure what he's going to do. And I don't like that feeling. I don't think anybody at the club does, you know, knowing whether or not he's going. The only way he goes is if the club forces him out, and I don't have any faith that that happens.
Yeah, I think with him going, I mean, it just feels like the club is evolving, and I'm not sure he's evolving with it. You know, you bring Muslintat in, you bring Rahul, I'm not going to try and pronounce his last name, Rahul Snelly. That's not right at all. It's not even close to what it is. But
that's why I never try.
Yeah, I gave it a good shot, and it went south. But you're bringing in people who are going to alleviate a lot of the stuff that Wenger struggles with, and I just wonder how much Wenger is okay with that. Like, I almost feel like he's liked carrying this extra load because it almost made him the martyr. Oh, see how much I do, and you know, I'm still not appreciated, and this and that. So that was always my feeling, that maybe he goes this summer. But to your point, you're signing ready-made players. That almost makes you think, all right, he's going to make one last go at this with these guys. If it doesn't work after next season, then he's gone. I mean, I see it both ways, and I know that's kind of non-committal.
You can kind of look at it this way too. I mean, if he is going to go, what's more attractive to an incoming manager? A club without Alexis, you know, without Theo, without Welbeck, so really your option, without maybe Ozil, who knows? So you have all these question marks about whether these players are going to stay. Well, now you're looking at bringing in Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan. Adding those players to the mix, I think, kind of keeps your... It makes that job a little bit, that much more appealing to another manager that's going to come in. And yes, the club is Arsenal. It's one of the top 10, you know, most famous clubs in the world. I understand all that. But in the competitive market that is world football right now, every little bit helps as far as getting that guy that you want. So I don't know. I mean, I sure as hell don't have an answer on what he's going to do. I don't have an answer on, you know, who's going to be running the club next year, or if it is Mislintat that's running these signings, if Wenger has just gone mad and is going, I don't know. You know, all I know, I'm happy that they're it looks like we're going to bring in two quality players. Yeah. Maybe a third.
Yeah, I think, well, it's interesting you bring up, like, who's making the signings. Like, I don't think Mislintat has just gone rogue and is just signing all these guys, and Wenger has no clue. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. But I do think they're at least giving Mislintat the authority to go out and say, like, look, this is the guy we need. And then they run it past Wenger, and Wenger's probably like, yeah, no, I could do with Aubameyang. I could work with Mkhitaryan, you know? I think with some of the younger signings, I think those are more the Mislintat signings. Like, it's from the comments Wenger made after Mavropanos was signed, it didn't sound like he knew much about him, you know? Like, his comments in training were like, oh man, he surprised us with how good he is. I'm like, well, it shouldn't surprise you, because you would have hypothetically been watching him for a little while. You know, I don't want to undersell the excitement of getting an Aubameyang, though, like, because I think he's just a phenomenal player. He's fun to watch. He's explosive. He's a good finisher. He makes intelligent runs. He's skilled. He links up well with other players. And I guess the question becomes, if this is all hypothetically based on him signing, of course, how do you then line up? Do you play 4-3-3 where you have, you know, Mkhitaryan on the right, Lacazette on the left, and Aubameyang up top with then Ozil, Ramsey, Xhaka, Ozil, Wilshere, Xhaka, you know, whatever you want to do? Or do you play 4-4-2 where you have Lacazette and Aubameyang up top, you have Mkhitaryan cut in from the left, Ozil cut in from the right, and kind of tucking into midfield to kind of give you a four-man midfield with Wilshere or Xhaka or Ramsey or Xhaka or whoever? How do you get the best out of these guys? Like, what would you want to see if this goes through?
Well, to me, I playing a 4-4-2 when Mesut Ozil is one of your outside midfielders and potentially somebody like Mkhitaryan cutting in from the left, that gets way too narrow, in my opinion. Just kind of the way that I like to, you know, the kind of tactics that I like to see. I like to see tactics like Dortmund, where you spread it, you spread the opposing team out. They use their width really, really well. You spread the other team out, and then you use that extra space that you create, you know, with smart runs and combination passing to cut through that extra space. My thought, and it's kind of something that I thought, and I commented on it in the last pod or the pod before, where a few games back, maybe a month or so ago now, I don't know if it was over the Christmas break or not, it almost looked like we shifted to more of a, you know, we took that top three, and I'm making hand gestures for people that are watching, but not, so if you're listening, you're not really going to know. So they took the top three that was like this, the so we were playing a 3-4-2-1, if you want to think about it that way, a Christmas tree. It took that and they inverted it. Forget the hand signals.
I see it.
Right, but they inverted it. So it really ended up being more like a 3-5-2, if you want to look at it that way, where you've got your three central midfielders. You had Xhaka and Jack sitting a little bit deeper with Ozil sitting in the 10 hole. You've got two guys, your wingbacks, playing on the outside. That, call them wingbacks, call them outside mids, whatever you want to call them. And then it was Alexis and Lacazette that had shifted up top. Maybe that's just because I think it was actually, I believe it was in the Chelsea game, because Ozil was dropping a lot deeper than he normally does. So I'm getting the ball a lot more centrally. So that's kind of one of the things that I liked about that game, is that he was more involved in the center of the pitch. So I think if you do bring in somebody like that, I think that formation accommodates it well, especially with Alexis going out. So, for example, you would be looking at Aubameyang and Lacazette up top, Ozil in the 10 hole behind them, Xhaka and Wilshere or Ramsey, whoever you want to play there, behind Ozil and the two center midfielders, Mkhitaryan on the outside left, and Bellerin, Maitland-Niles. You know, you could move Kolasinac when he's healthy into the left. So it does give you a little bit more options than those wingbacks, depending on if you want to keep it a little bit more defensive, a little more attacking, so on and so forth. So I think that, assuming that Arsenal will keep a back three, because Arsenal hasn't shown any proclivity to really change that this season, that would be the way that I would line up. I think that gets your best players on the field, and it gets them in as close to a position for them to succeed as possible.
Yeah, I mean, with the three at the back, I mean, I just don't love it, to be quite honest. And
right, but we can agree that it's not going anywhere, at least not this season.
Yeah, no, I think there might be something to that. Now, one thing that I saw that AFC Camden, some of you know him as Dean on Twitter, mentioned that we're still pushing hard for Johnny Evans. And that one kind of surprises me, because I don't know exactly what that solves. You know, I know that Chambers and Holding, we don't want them playing tons of games at this point, because they just haven't really shown the ability under this manager, who is not capable of instilling defensive discipline. So maybe they're just thinking we need a pure defender in there. And, you know, you have like Koscielny, Mustafi,
and clearly Mertesacker can't hang anymore, so you really need somebody else. We're short back there, and guys that they have confidence in. So
And Koscielny's struggling with injuries too, so I guess maybe that's the thinking that Evans is still going to get a ton of games, and I mean he doesn't inspire tons of excitement in me, but then again, no central defender really does.
You know?
At least yeah, like at least not unless their name is like Raphael Varane, who I still think is an incredible player, or Umtiti at Barcelona, but obviously none of those guys will be coming our way. So
like
maybe
the kid that just went to Bayern, I can't remember his name. Keep going.
No, but you know, those types of players, like they don't grow on trees. So maybe you're thinking Johnny Evans with the experience. You know, maybe that's the thinking. So we'll see how much we push for that if we do close these Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan deals. So, you know, with the incomings, there's also been a few surprising, at least for me, surprising outgoings. The first was Francis Coquelin, who has gone to Valencia.
Yes.
And
reunited with Gabriel.
Yes. And then Theo Walcott to Everton. And kind of curious to get your thoughts on those outgoings. For me, Coquelin surprised me. You know, that I mean, I don't get me wrong, I'm perfectly happy that he won't be shoved into games where I just don't think he serves much purpose. We don't have tons of midfield depth, but I'm hoping this means that Maitland-Niles moves to midfield more regularly and gets more time there, because I think he's going to shine. We got a decent fee for him, nothing crazy, but obviously if a team that's doing well in La Liga thinks that Coquelin can be an asset, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, like, if we just weren't using him properly. You know, my thoughts on how his role with us kind of transitioned from being just a pure destroyer who broke up attacks to almost playing as a box-to-box midfielder. And
yeah, it worked out really well.
Which, yeah, clearly worked out well for no one involved. So, you know, that one kind of surprised me. But the Walcott one, the writing's been on the wall for a little while just because he's only been put into the Europa League games or the Cup games. And Walcott's one of those players who's frustrated me at times because, you know, he's not the most skilled player, and he gets caught offside too often. But I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for him. You know, he's been at the club for 12 years. He was brought in at 16. You know, he's been one of our best big game players for years. You know, he's always been one that I never had a doubt would show up against Spurs, United, City, Liverpool, Chelsea. He scored against all those teams in big moments too. He never let the occasion phase him. In terms of being an ambassador for the club and the community, he's always been out doing things, charity work. He's very gracious in interviews. He's well-spoken. It just seemed like he's reached a point in his career where he needed that change. You know, in terms of being an asset to the club on the field, he really hasn't been able to do much this year. But let's not forget, last season he actually had a really good season, at least towards the beginning, scoring goals. The formation change kind of doomed him, honestly, because there just was nowhere for him to get involved. You know, he couldn't play in that 4-2-3-1 as the outside right midfielder. So that one bummed me out a little bit from a sentimental standpoint when you go through all the great moments he's had. But kind of curious to get your take on those outgoings.
Well, what's kind of crazy is the outgoings are that we're seeing right now and potentially the rest of this window, with the Welbeck rumored to Besiktas and Giroud rumored as part of the Aubameyang deal. We're making all of the moves that I make in my first summer of every FIFA career with Arsenal. So sell Coquelin, sell Walcott, sell Giroud, sell Welbeck. You know, I think it's positive. I mean, Coquelin, cool. I mean, he did well for us for a little bit, and then, like you said, his role changed and became completely useless. So good for him. He doesn't seem too happy with it, because he was got a little bit feisty when a fan put an Arsenal scarf around his neck for a picture at Valencia a couple days ago, and he like took it and threw it off. So he's not exactly happy with us, but whatever. Theo, that shocked me. Not because it wasn't a transfer that should have happened. It's just always had the impression that he was going to be here forever. I mean, Theo was incredibly fast and was a spectacular finisher, but he never developed the technical and mental side of the game that he needed to be to really fulfill his full potential, I guess. But it's good for him. It's probably a year or so overdue. And I think he'll do really well out over there at Everton, and I hope he does. I really do. He always seemed like a great guy, and he was always great to have at the club. So I'm happy for him. Happy he's going to get a shot somewhere else, and I wish him good luck. And he'll probably score against us when we see them next.
That's the thing. We play them really soon, and I have
He's definitely going to score a goal or two. There's no doubt about it.
Horrifying feeling he's going to score. But
no doubt about it.
The nice thing about – well, not the nice thing, but just it kind of exemplifies what a good guy he is. Like, as soon as that transfer's made official, his first message was to the Arsenal fans, just thanking them for their support. And even people who have been super critical of him were, you know, really effusive in their praise for him. And you could tell even Arsene Wenger was kind of not sad, but just kind of disappointed with how it all turned out.
Sure it was sad because he's even said it. He thinks of himself as almost a father figure to a lot of the young players. And if you think about when Theo came into the club and the other players that came into the club around the same time, you know, that was when we were going through our youth movement. And I saw a picture. I want to say our buddy Rob tweeted the picture around of, you know, we're going to list some names here. They're going to evoke some really bad memories, but
I'm going to start crying.
Fabregas, Nasri, Van Persie, Theo. Like, that was, for me, one of my favorite Arsenal teams, like that era of players. And Theo was a big part of that team. So, you know, he's always going to hold a little bit of a soft spot. So, like I said, I hope he does really well over there. And in all honesty, it's going to be, I hope we're going to see more turnover this window than we've seen in the last two summers combined. Potentially. And it's crazy to really think about. But, you know, it's needed. It's well overdue. And I hope that it's something that continues. The club has a lot of dead weight that needs to get shifted out. And because if you don't shift it out, you can't bring in new players. I mean, you can go back and forth about the reasons why and get into the details about the wages and how much you can increase them in your commercial revenue, blah, 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 which there's certainly that's a summer conversation when there's not as much other stuff to get to. But like, you know, since I promised earlier on in the episode, we are going to get to some U.S. national team stuff. And if we don't transition to that, we're going to be stuck on transfers for the next 2 hours because we can keep doing that. That's for sure. All right, well, thanks for tuning in to this part of the Eurosnob podcast. Like you probably know, this is the Arsenal content. So if you're looking for the U.S. soccer stuff, like I said before the start of this one, check out the episode released right after this in iTunes. That's going to have all the U.S. stuff. I hope you enjoyed this one, and I hope you enjoyed the next part as well.